can't think of any other. And obviously the bars of chocolate and your 50, your 5 or 7 cigarettes, you know, per man. And that is the compo rations. And that is divided out, you know, section. The corporal of the platoon would divide that out. see, I'm a tin M&B, okay, a tin each or something. Help yourself how you eat it, you know. Some blokes may eat it cold, others may have tried to light a fire. Or I think it was some, what they call the Tommy cooker, you know, the tin of quickly inflammable solid, you know, just that flared up and you could, like a little stove, heat your M&B in the tin as it was, you see.
I wondered about heating things, because when you mentioned the tea, I was wondering what you used to boil the teapot or the
Well, you have a mess tin, so that is what you made your own tea in, you know. You could maybe pour together, and sometimes, again, through periods of time, you know, you got a tin of jam, you know, from the cookhouse, and you got that tin of jam that may have held some pound of jam. So with the result, once the jar was emptied, or the tin, and cleaned out, it made good boiling water, and maybe acquire one or two, and was able to take it with you for a few weeks, and that is just cooking for getting all the water, and that would make a few cups of tea. And each boy would put in his handful of tea. And sugar was included in that tea. I forgot about that. You know.
And was it easy enough to get supplies of tea and things? You know, was it easy enough to get a supply of tea to make your tea?
Yes. Well, that came with your compo rations. You know, maybe a little packet of a paper bag with a tea, dry tea in it. But yes, now something comes back. You had forgotten about these things, you see, but something comes back. How you coped with that.
And what about fuel? How did you actually heat it? What did you use to boil the water?
Oh, well, on your Tommy cooker, you had this. It wasn't petrol, I think. It was more a solid that could light up and burn. It took a long time to heat, and you never got real boiling water, but it was hot or something. And the saving part was. If a quartermaster got up with the rations, then he'd a, what they call a hay box, you know, it was like a big container of tea, and then it kept warm, and it's like a vacuum flask, same principle, and that is how you, you know, managed to survive. And then a good cup of tea once a day, or maybe once every couple of days.
And when you were little as well, did... At that point, were you ever able to try any of the Italian food? You know how we all eat.
Oh, yes. Well, some blokes are a bit dodgy about eating foreign food, you see. But they did, occasionally they got tried to barter and they would have got fresh eggs, you know, off the native. You'd have given them, well, maybe fags and got a dozen eggs or something. So that supplemented your rations, you know, getting a fresh egg, a fried egg, a boiled egg. Yes. Yeah. And then, summertime, I'm getting near the end, grapes, you know, you got melons and grapes, you know, more fresh food off the land. So that helped to give you a variety. Yeah.
But you didn't
and then
the
wine, you'd have gone for monkey's blood, the blokes used to call it, you know, red wine.
And did you try it then?
Yes.
Like
some
it?
Blokes would have gone, you know, monkeys, but it's quite good wine, you know, but it wasn't refined to the same extent. But and then the bread, you know, brown bread or that. Although we got bread too, you know, baked white bread, you see. At times you got a loaf, a bit hard, by the time we got it, you know, it was drying out. So that was,
But you didn't try any of the pastas at that time, did
not
you?
Not at that time, no. Not even macaroni, you know. That used to be Italian food, you know, wops from. Although they'd made their macaroni in long bits, you see. Eventually, we got used to, you know, sometimes you got some of it, and others you didn't.
So, like in your job as well, with this reconnaissance unit, Does that mean that you got out in front of
it? Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And had you to locate the enemy then?
Yes, so you maybe bumped them, shall we say. You made contact. You didn't actually have to engage them by fighting all the time. You would have made, oh, that's where they are. And you would keep your eye on them sort of business and report back to, you know, your commanding officer. They would report further back so that the generals getting this information would work out a plan or work out what we think the enemy's going to do, you know. But anyway, that is the higher echelon that did that. We just said, we've spotted enemy such and such, you know, either very strong or they appear to digging in or otherwise are moving out. So that's part of the things that they did. Some days you never make contact with them.
And did you like doing that work better than the work you were doing with the Gordons?
Yes. One way is because you had a vehicle, you know, with you, which meant you weren't always walking a lot, you know, at this time. A lot of it was like doing infantry work, I will admit. But being a vehicle and you had a vehicle crew, you know, you worked a very camaraderie spirit, you know, things like that. So that's what I should have said, you know, for the Russians and things like that. We had a wee bit of better off than the infantryman because we used to get petrol for your vehicles and with what they called a Benghazi border, something that was developed during the desert warfare. And I got tin, fill it with sand, you see, and, you know, fill it, and then soak it in petrol. And you get a quick blaze. You have to be very careful how you lit it, you know. But this would give you a quick blaze, and you'd heat your water very quickly, I think, and make your tea there. Or if you wanted a fry, if you'd had the equipment to do a fry on it, like fry your egg, I've just mentioned eggs. Or maybe you've got bacon in your ration, you know. And that's the sort of thing. But the Benghazi bundle was useful. The tankies, the people who are mechanized like a tanks, not they, well, they developed this Benghazi bundle. So that's
it. And how did you manage to cook your bacon? You know, how you didn't have a pan or anything.
No, again, you're messed in, you know, this messed in, it's flat, isn't it? Square. It was there. Deluxe, you know, the Caledonian Hotel. But what a change, you know.
Oh, I forgot about the mess tin. I thought you might have mentioned the other tin that you were speaking about. Was it the tea or something was in it?
Yes. Well, sometimes you acquire bits of metal. You can't always carry them with you, you know. But you maybe acquire a flat piece of metal or things like a platter. You see a few of them in the cookhouse in the army, you know, and they would go missing, you know, but that is a flat thing. And if you acquired one of them, that would help you to fry some things. But you can't always take them with all the time, you know, you've got to lose them sometime. So that's you develop a sort of make-do and mend, you know, that's fine, but you can't carry everything with you, you know. You think, oh, I'll take that with me. But again, it becomes a cumbersome. No, it's too heavy. It's not worth the effort. And you've got to leave it.
And the things that you had to leave behind, did you have to dig them in or anything? Or did you just
Maybe you did. You just left it. It was all part of the bottles, the scrap of bottle, you know. I used to see, especially in the desert, blokes coming, Arabs coming up and cutting with a camel and picking up rifles that was left in the battlefield, you know, enemy or British, you know. Often wondered who was in charge of these boys because no one seemed to bother them, you know, either take them, just they picked up this and loaded up their camel and way back to, I don't know where. But it's just things that go on in a war, and people or someone else will look after that, you don't know who. But
and so, could there be occasions like that where people would leave a rifle or something?
No, but, well, you've got prisoners, people have taken prisoners, well, they've got to leave a, you know, they come with their hands up, leave a rifle somewhere, you know. So that's one way where they can pick up rifles, ammunition, and stores, enemy stores. You'll bump into an enemy camp, you know, where they haven't had time to pull out, and the stores everywhere. Well, if you're in a foot, you don't have trucks to carry it all. You can't take everything. You just leave it. And this is where the scavengers or the cleaners up come in behind, get what they want.
Okay then. Part three, and you were going to be telling us about the Adriatic and.
Oh yes, well, after Cassino, the Germans retreated, the Frigg affair burned, you know, before they stopped again, and getting near Florence, and I think it's what the Germans called the Gustav Line, you know, and they had a wee bit of stand there, you know, and which always holds you up, you know, you've got to build up your strength to have an attack again. So that took a while. That came into the summer of 1944, they said, because Rome was taken around about May 44, I think, a breakout from Anzio 44, yeah, and that. So it all went to mid-summer in 44.
And were you at any of these places? Were you at the Gustav Line or in Florence or Rome or anything?
Getting near Florence, yes. Florence, that had been part of it. I forget. And this is the part that affected us. You know, the Americans, they came up the, not the Adriatic, the Tyrrhenian Sea, I think is the other one, up by Rome. The Americans always picked the sort of juicy place. You know, the modern place. You know, the ones that seem to be more, made more sense. Genoa, Milano, and so on. Turin. Anyway, that's it. Okay, I stopped at Arezzo, Florence, you know, and that like, and then we broke through again and headed up towards the River Po. You know, it was before we got to Venice. So the slight hold up, you know, to cross the Po, you know, a defensive line, natural defensive. So again, we got over there, and again, we got across the Po and coming head to Venice by this time, Mestre, and we got beyond Venice, and then we stopped. I think of Venice, Rimini, and that's where there was a bit of a hold up at Rimini, or just before we got to Rimini, and that we seem to have stopped there a long time, you know, over the winter.
And seeing these places as well, you know, near Florence and Venice and that, once you did get into them,
yes,
were they still places of beauty or were they a mess?
Oh, yeah, so Florence was quite unscathed, you may say. So was Venice, not touched, you know, very. No, they didn't touch Venice and shot them. Rimini and I'd got a wee bit plastered. San Marino, no, it wasn't touched. No, it was inviolate, a neutral country, you know, a little wee island, you know, just very scenic. What do you say, not a toy, like a toyland sort of area. We always saw it up, not far from Rimini, really, you know, and it went up on a slope, you know. Castle-like. Anyway, that is, as I said, they didn't touch San Marino. And then they got a wee bit blasting, you know. And I saw us held up around about Faenza. What's the name of that? Forli was another place, you know. Cesena, C-E-S-E-N-E. We're all places, but, you know, near area, you know, we held up there. So that stuck us there at the end of 44, you know, again, Christmas time. And So that was stuck instead of stuck. And then things got quiet. The Germans stopped and said, oh, we're still not so much fighting, no. So we're stuck there over the winter of 44. And then 45, offensive, getting in into February, March, offensive started again. And by this time, a lot of the Air Force did a lot of work, you know, the bombing raids and that, and further into, not too much Austria, further into Germany, you know, and then you had the partisans stirring things up a wee bit for the enemy. And then 45, spring of 45, made a big offensive and right into Austria, you know. And I think that's where we stopped, around about Austria.
And were you in Austria as well?
Eh?
Were you in Austria
yes,
as well?
Yes, uh-huh. Right.
Which part were you in?
Carleton, a country like the Aberdeenshire, or like what Grampian region would be, called Carleton. You know, they divided into, that was one of the southern Austria, you know, Carleton. Villach was Klagenfurt, I think, would have been the capital of that county. And then they went further in up to Graz, and then this political one, Vienna, well, the four powers, Russia, France, and the Russians were a bit awkward. You know, before you get up to through to Vienna, they used to hold up the convoys and check them out, you know, so that your days trying to get through to Vienna, you know.
And with our hold-ups like that, you know, when you say that, there was, you know, you might be waiting days. Was this all big convoys that were going through?
No, not always big convoys, no. It was just convoys. How big, I wouldn't like to see, but I figured on it. But I know when they did try to get through into Vienna, and you were in the Russian sector to get through into Vienna. This is the... But I should make it clear, the Russian sector, they were on the outskirts of or in the part that they had to get through. So that's how they caused the hold up. They had the controlling rights, obviously, for that road, because that is their sector.
And do you remember how you felt, you know, like when you were going through this section that was under Russian control?
Yes.
Did they make it difficult for you or anything?
Yes, it made it awkward. That's what I could say. They just stopped you, you know, checked out where you're going and what you got and various things, but they could take a long time, you know, and of course I think things are a rather touchy, you know, with the political leaders and so on, so you couldn't actually take up your gun and boom, boom, have a go at them, you know. You had to be diplomatic or something. So that,
and at that point as well, you know, were you travelling with a huge amount of men, or was it like maybe...
Oh, small parties, small groups, that's right there.
When you say a small group, what size roughly would that have been?
Oh, groups, oh, maybe, oh, 30, yeah, 30 or that.
So it was quite small.
Quite big, yes,
I was maybe wondering if it was like a battalion strength that would be moving forward.
No, at this stage... things were a lot easier, you know. You're liable to get lost, you know, run away with yourself, you know, because the German opposition had collapsed and you had displaced persons getting in your way and things like that, you know. Ex-prisoner of war, people who had prisoner of war camps have been emptied, you know, and have inmates going anywhere, you know. So there are a lot of loss of control in some ways, you know. Although the British were good, they could, in their sectors, they came into town and installed what they called a town major, you know, a senior officer, and then there was good German speakers or English speakers amongst the Germans, and you would get out chief of police, who was chief of police and so on, and who was the flat house man, you know, at the town, a provost or the town council, you know, who's in charge. Okay, get things going and we'll help you, and don't come any funny stuff sort of business, just get things going. And at the same time, he was weeding out people was coming telling you, oh, he was the Nazi party. He was, and they had to kind of round them up, all that. But he had a lot of this. Yeah, they were that. Just boys trying to get a name for to get work into your good books and other ones, and that the creep thing. So it took a wee while to settle down. But the week after was control, and we all said, no, British Army, kept your own communication, kept yourself better informed, rationed, and so on, so that you were an effective unit.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, by this time, the political side had known what was happening in with the Germans, and then you have units trained to come in. You had what they called Allied military control, a sort of civilian com military establishment, who would, had started putting up not camps, displaced person camps, and getting them run, and things like that, so that you would keep a civic control. And of course, the army was still there, you know, either waiting in camps, you know, you had stopped, and you would have, you know, got yourself reorganized in a sensible camp. So they were made to aid what they call the civil power. If anything got wrong, if a lot of civilians started, you know, getting strikes or just making things unpleasant, you had the military to step in. So I would say, and the Allied military government, whatever they made, they were a civilian thing like that. So they had things quite well organized. Under the circumstances, not perfect by any means, but organized.
And I was wondering about, you know, like displaced persons, refugees now.
Yes.
Did you just have to kind of ignore them as you were going through? Or?
Yes, that's right. Initially, yes. Yeah, couldn't, until you got, you left out to the Allied military government, you know, they were looking after the displaced persons. But it's funny how people get to know these things, you know, they're somewhere where they'll get food, they'll get shelter, be looked after, in a one way, you know, there's, until they get settled down, you know, and they would be sent, the multi-government would have them sorted out, you know, there were Slavs, Yugoslavs, Jews, Russians, all Norwegians even, you know, all been picked up, had been used as slave labour and things, and they found themselves in southern Germany in that.
And so was there a lot of people like going about the roads and things like that?
Yes, initially there was. But again, once they got to hear about displaced persons camps and so on, a lot of them would try and get into a town and for food or that. And through the towns, they would be taking a note of where you're from, you see, and they'd be put into some camp, you know, on a hostels or things like that. And
as you were going through as well, were you ever involved in any of the, like, prisoner of war camps?
Yes.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Were you involved in, you know, setting the inmates free or anything?
Well, a lot of them had freed themselves. Others had said, well, what's the point in rushing around? We're here, we know we'll get fed, and we'll still have a camp to stay in. So quite a number did remain in the camp, you know. Where we had British soldiers who were prisoners, they were easy enough to, you know, they came back, so they were sent back to the top prisoner of war camp, where they were looked after, checked out, and then fed further, and always sent further back, so on their way home. So that's what happened to them. Where they had different nationalities, they were sent to a displaced person camp, and depending on who they were, Russians and that, well, they were always classed as Germans, didn't always treated them rough, very, didn't think they were, should have been living. We came across once Mongolians and that, you know, from, you know, far off, and they were a bit uncivilized, I was, not used to the usual sanitation that we had, you know. Thing. That's what I would say. Otherwise, they were docile enough, you know. They were to go there and that, they would go quite no offense, you know. They weren't very aggressive. Others of German and that, they were, well, you'd understand the Germans, but they were solid at that, you know, coming into their country, and they had to be beaten, you know. They did what they were told, but not with a smile on their face. So that's what I remember of it. And then, of course, the Allied military government introduced a new monetary policy, you know. They printed their own money, and devalued German mark, you know, a fair bit, which to the normal working person who had saved up a bit of money was a big blow. Devalued their savings, you know, by at least a half, you know. So they were not too happy in that one. But they did try to get things under control. And then, of course, you had a black market set up, you know. Always guys or people trying to make a bit of dough, you know. Fags was a great, sugar, soap, all good things to barter. All things scarce supply, all things made money. And the Yanks, of course, they when they came in, they made it flourish. I blame the Yanks. They could organize black gangsters. They could get it going. And other blokes, some of them weren't far behind, you know, this black market.
But were you still getting supplies up here?
Well, this is one thing. This is where the non-smokers could benefit, you know. You boys sell their fags, and they got good money for it, they say. But the trouble is, we didn't have enough fags to get the benefit of it. So they lost out. But at that time, black market life. And fags, as I said, soap, sugar, not tea. Coffee was a good black market, but soap. Other things, well, petrol, of course, benzene, and that would have gone. But of course, we had our own self, and we weren't getting, too much, not enough to have spare to expend it. So that is part of it. But, of course, you didn't want to delve into black market, because the British Army had their military police on the go, and they were keeping check, you know, and wonder how you spent your money or what you did with it, you know. And various things like that. They could catch up with you, and you didn't fancy doing a spell in jail, you know, and of course you think we'll do for demob leave. But you didn't want to spend that lot of 56 days in jail, or maybe a couple of years.
And so, did the military police ever ask you, like, what you did
Not so much then, but they always had a special, what they call the SIB, a Special Investigation Bureau in the British Army, you know. Part of the military police, but they were like what you call the detectives here, you know. And they'd worry if how blokes spent their money, you know. How come, they maybe check your pay sheets on that? You have a lot of money, Sammy. How do you manage that? They just say, I didn't spend it.
Was there anything for you to spend it on apart from cigarettes?
Well, you didn't have, when you're on the front line, you didn't spend a lot of money. That's all you spent was what the fags you bought and the chocolate. Otherwise, you didn't spend money. And you built up a bit of savings. Now, by this time, you're getting what they call local leave, you know. Even before, as a tail end of 44, you got what they call local leave, you know. And you had a fair bit of money saved up to go, so that is fine. You could go down to Rome, you know. You got a leave for the month, 5-7 days leave, you know. That is fine. And they had